Welcome back to the Weekender on Y95. I'm Kevin Northup. We continue our look at last Wednesday's community conversation on healthcare in Yarmouth. ERs, mental health, and COVID mandates were discussed. A local chiropractor had a question for the health leaders.
My question is, when will the rules change to allow the same policies in the rest of the province that exists in the HRM regarding chiropractors being able to requisition the x-rays? Should I elaborate on why that's important?
Well, you can't, but I can give you an update if you'd like.
Please.
Okay. So we recently met with the Chiropractor Association, I know that, to your point, HRM have been allowed, and there have been other chiropractors in small pockets across the province who've been able to order x-rays. And so actually we are working right now with them in order to enable chiropractors across the province to order x-rays. There'll be some work around order entry and making sure that you can get the results that you require as well through the share process, but that is actively happening between the Department of Health and the association right now.
Why are you dragging your feet on this? Why is that happening like today?
Well, it is happening. They could be talking about it today, but I know that we had a meeting in the last couple of weeks and they've committed to work together, and we're going to get back together to find the updates. So we do have an MLA who's a chiropractor, and he's quite engaged in the conversation as well. And so that is...
I'm happy to hear that you're receiving. I'm certain it's a very good presentation. But sometimes time is of the essence. If I suspect fracture or bone cancer, sometimes having the studies done promptly is enormously significant. And I can tell them to go see their MD, and they might get in within a week, and then there's another couple of days before they have the films done, and then another day before the furnace in. And sometimes that kind of delay is life-threatening. And that's the best case. A lot of people don't have a medical doctor, and that's a higher percentage outside of the HRM than it is inside of it. So why to discriminate against rural Nova Scotians when you know that this is effective in other places in the province is beyond my comprehension. For someone who doesn't have an MD to go to eMERGE and then wait to be x-rayed, and the triage nurse is going to put them way at the end of the list because they're not what, necessarily suffering or anything, this is ludicrous. So I would like you to answer my question, which is, how come that's not happening too sweet?
I can't say any more than it's happening. We're working with them to make sure that we have the rules in place, and we work through the association, and we expect that in a very short period of time you will be able to order x-rays, and I can't give you the exact date, but I know that we're actually working on it now.
Long-term care for seniors was also brought up.
I'm a past member of the Nova Scotia Seniors Advisory Council, and we had a committee write up a report having to do with continuing care. I believe that the government's efforts so far in long-term care has to be applauded. But I think we can find efficiencies in funding and efficiencies in the betterment of the Nova Scotian seniors by having more and better continuing care, home care. I looked at a report coming out from Sweden. This particular individual was staying at home, and there were 6 individuals coming to his home per day. Now, we are lucky if we can get half an hour a week. We have to work on that. Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you very much for raising that. I do want to let you know, before I came into politics, I was the CEO of a long-term care facility. And so certainly continuing care is very close to my heart. So you're right, there has been some really good strides. We've increased the number of beds across the province, and it's going to take us a little while to do that. To your point, one of the things that Nova Scotia Health is working on in the city initially, but we'll look at how it works, is transition to community. So rather than having only one option of going home or going to long-term care, these transition to care to community facilities will allow us to have rehabilitative folks in that facility, different than rehab, but really because folks often will deteriorate in hospital because they're not moving around and doing the things that they would normally do, they can decondition. So it's a reconditioning place so that people can get on their feet again and we can start to transition them home. So we recently had the opportunity to visit Denmark and look at their system. Particularly strong support for seniors at age 65, whether you want or need it or not. You have someone phone you and they talk about your goals for the next year in order to prevent frailty. And they also do a loneliness assessment on you. So really understanding how you're connected to your community and making sure that people are connected. So Minister Barb Adams is a physiotherapist and she's quite passionate about seniors in long-term care. And so thank you. I'm going to let her know that you spoke to us today.
And comments about those most at risk to contract COVID and their future.
I want to make an observation, which is that 3 years ago pandemic began, we didn't know what we were going to face in the next 3 years, and we don't know what it might have been like if it had been different. I guess if that's it. So I want to say thank you I want to be grateful for the fact that we had one provincial leadership team in healthcare that was managing our health and the pandemic at the beginning. I think it's possible, if we were to have an imagination, that we could envision that it might have had a different outcome if we had been 9 health authorities or 3 or 4 district regional boards or whatever iteration of healthcare we've seen over the last 30 or 40 years. So I'm really grateful that we were led by one provincial team. And now we're at a different phase in the pandemic. It's not over, but it's transitioning. And the question that I have for you as we transition into this next phase is, are you going to leave behind the individuals in this province who are immunocompromised? Because it feels as though we who have remained uninfected have become an inconvenience. And I'd like to know, going forward, because you have combined operations with policy, I feel it's appropriate to bring that question forward and ask you to what are you doing to protect the disabled, but who are immunocompromised in this province at this stage in the pandemic, when literally COVID is everywhere?
I'll try and answer that to the best of my ability. So. I think what we've all learned as a result of the pandemic is infection prevention and control principles that perhaps were not as mainstream. So in my work as a registered nurse, as an example, if we had someone who was immunocompromised, perhaps I'll give the example of chemotherapy in hospital. Sometimes post-chemotherapy, white cells drop and people are very at risk, as an example of getting an infection. And so as a result of that, we would gown and mask when we went in to provide care or anybody visited in order to protect the patient. And so while there is also our ability to protect ourselves through the variety, you know, the various public health measures, we also know that we have to look at the risk of the people around us and use those principles, you know, to the best of our ability in order to protect each other. So immunization for us is very, very key, making sure that immunization is widely available and that it's accessible to people. That's the first thing. Anybody, you know, that you have the immunizations that you require to protect you. We do continue to, we aren't masked here today because you can't hear us when we have the masks on, and we've gotten feedback from people that they can't. So in small, in larger groups, if you feel that you're at risk, then you should definitely mask and use those principles that we've been using all along.
After the meeting, the leaders had to quickly get to Shelburne for the evening session. Here's Nova Scotia Health CEO Karen Oldfield.
You know, this is getting later in the process, obviously, with these consultations with the public. What do you take away from today?
I think it's, so there's a lot to dissect from today, a lot to absorb and a lot to process. And I assure you, on the way home in the car, we will be doing all of that. But when you read between the lines, you know, there is a divide in the community between, I'll say, vaccination and non-vaccination. That's clear. And, you know, I'm very empathetic to those who are on the outside looking in at this moment in time. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, really, to hear that. And, you know, it may not be forever, but right now, today, this is where we are. And so that's one thing for sure. But the second thing is, I think part of it is in the way we speak as well. That, you know, the last question, what are you doing for Yarmouth? Because so many things that we're talking about deal with Yarmouth. So, for example, Yarmouth has a virtual emergency. It's one of three in the province. Yarmouth is getting the fixed wing. It's not to transport people to Halifax back all the time. It's when they really need to be there for tests or what have you, that we can make it happen much more quickly, in a lot more comfort for the patient, but also free up the emergency resource for the community. So we are moving forward with the ER. I mean, I can't speak 3 years ago, I wasn't here, but obviously some members of the community feel that, you know, this is taking too long. And so, you know, we hear that. And interestingly enough, as I participated in a meeting of health leaders yesterday, basically the premier's message is go like hell. That's his message. And so, you know, that's the message I would share with the community. We've been told to go like hell. We're trying really hard.
And here are post-meeting comments from Health Minister Michelle Thompson.
What do you take away from today's session here in Yarmouth?
So every time we come to a community, we hear about concerns that are localized and very important to communities. So, we heard a lot of concerns about the emergency room today. And, you know, we wanted to share some of the things that we announced in Halifax around better waiting room support and also support for clinicians. So not unusual in terms of people's concerns around the emergency room. And certainly recruitment and retention we know is really tough down in across the province, but we know Western Zone as well. So just working with communities to support and recruitment efforts to make sure that you have the clinicians that you need here.
Liberal leader and Yarmouth MLA Zach Churchill was also in attendance and shared his thoughts.
This is your community coming out here today talking about healthcare. Your thoughts on what was heard here today and what do you hope the province receives in the message here?
Well, listen, there's obviously a lot of concern, particularly around our emergency departments right now and the vacancies with staffing. So we're understaffed, we're particularly understaffed here in Yarmouth, and we don't know what the government is going to do to fill those staffing positions. Their answer to the ER crisis has been to create more positions, but with vacancy rates up towards 80%, I think that's going to be a very hard thing to do to fill new jobs that are coming into the system when so many are already vacant.
And I want to ask you about their announcement today, this morning, for some more supports for ERs. What are your thoughts on the announcement today?
We need more supports in our ERs, without question. I was happy to see that they're talking about expanding the scope of practice further for pharmacists. That's something that we've been pushing for a year now, and that can help, certainly particularly in rural areas. My concern around the enhanced positions at our ERs is how we're going to find the people to fill them. We've got vacancy rates upwards of 80% in some of our hospitals, so filling new jobs, I think, is going to be a real challenge when we can't fill the ones that we have currently in the system.
The minister and healthcare leaders will take the information and make more considerations on changes to healthcare, which continues to be the number one issue Nova Scotians are talking about. For the latest on healthcare announcements and more, visit cjls.com and listen to Y95 News. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. For story suggestions or to submit feedback, email news.cjls@radioabl.ca or call our newsline at 902-749-1919. To listen to archived versions of our program, visit us online at cjls.com and click on The Weekender. The Weekender is a production of the Y95 Newsroom and is brought to you by Aris Yarmouth, your one-stop healthy home center.